My darling, it's time to put a stop to all the madness. You deserve so much more in your life. It's your time to glow up. Welcome to the Time to Glow Up podcast with Rebecca Hennings and guests. Your journey to transforming from the inside out begins here.
Welcome back to the Time to Glow Up podcast, the first one of 2021. Is it? I don't know. The first one with a guest for 2021. That's all I know. So I do have a guest right here. So if you're listening, I'm going to introduce her in a second. But just to let you know, for those people who are new or if you needed a reminder, Time to Glow Up was born out of the fact that I'd gone through a breast cancer experience. And after moments or months of being really, really sad, then started to experience my glow up. Now, what is a glow up? The glow up is an internal to external transformation. So it's much more than how you look, though that is part of it. It's about finding ways of dealing with the difficulties, the challenges that we face, the trauma, the hurt. And it's about not only dealing with the internal stuff, but it's also about looking after your body. It's about taking care of, thinking about your health, your fitness, your mind. It's about looking at your personal goals, your personal development goals. And of course, it's about looking at how you look. So it's all of that stuff. So today, I'm speaking to a guest that I've been wanting to speak to for quite a while now. It's taken me a while to arrange this, but we're finally here. And firstly, can I just introduce her? Because I'm talking way too much. So can I introduce Yvette? Hello, Yvette.
Hello. Nice, like, to see you again. And it's so lovely to be on your show.
And I mean, you just give me life right now with your outfit. So if you're listening, actually, can you describe your outfit? I don't want to disrespect it by getting it wrong. So for those who are listening, go on.
I've got a green wrap on and I've got a green shawl. I wanted to go with the African vibe today.
Yeah, you're just looking so regal. You got this like a khaki green. It's just drapes across her shoulders. It's beautiful. So I've known Yvette since we went to university. So this is like way back when, like many moons ago. And it was a performing arts college. So I was studying theatre. What were you studying at the time?
I was doing small-scale theatre.
Yeah, so we did the same course. Yeah, but you were ahead of me. So we initially met there, and maybe I saw you a few times after that, but not many. But what was most, the time I saw you most recently was at the auditions for the BBC, BBC WM in 2019.
Yes.
That was the year of my glow up. That was the year I started to reach out and to do different things. And I happened to see you there and we reconnected. You know, I told you my story and you shared a few things that happened in your life, and it was like, oh my gosh. And you mentioned what you're doing. So okay, let's go backwards. So what is it you do currently, Vet?
Okay, at the moment I'm a therapist. I've been a therapist now for 15 years.
Okay.
So I do quite a few numbers of different jobs, really. So I work for the NHS. I do counselling for them. I also do training for the NHS. So I do stress management training for staff. Okay. And then I also do a stress management course for managers of the NHS of how to manage their staff who are stressed.
Right.
So, and I also work in a boys' school, secondary boys' school, doing counselling. And I work at a sixth form college doing counselling. And then in my free time, I do workshops.
I know.
This is all in the lockdown. I've made up these workshops and started to deliver them.
Yeah.
So I do four different types of workshops, from like how to basically do journaling, to stress management, to resilient courses, to how to listen to yourself more and listen to others. And I'm in the middle of writing a book, basically.
Wow.
It's called I Wish I Can Fly. And it's all about...
Repeat the name?
Oh, it's called I Wish I Can Fly.
Okay.
So it's all about basically going after what you really want in life and what stops you from going after these things and how sometimes it's our old beliefs that are stopping us.
Absolutely.
So I'm very excited about that at the moment.
And that's what I've, you know, really wanted to connect with you on. Not only, I mean, we'll talk about your story, but also, you know, when I see you on social media, I just get this genuine feeling of, how do I describe it? Not only peace and comfort, I feel as though where you come from, with the posts that you share, they're considered. Really thinking about how you feel, you always feel as though you're present. Not only are you present, but what you're sharing, it comes from a very genuine and researched place, if I should say. Like, you don't just put any old stuff out, is what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah. And I always feel like when you've put something out, I'm like, oh my gosh, I needed to see that today.
Wow. So
what makes you like, okay, so for instance, when I was sharing posts during my cancer experience, it was all about me, really. Uh-huh. Because I was trying to find words that would help to soothe me. What is it? Mm-hmm. What's the motivation behind you sharing the posts that you do?
Well, when I think about sharing a post, first of all, I think about my friends, and I care about them a lot. Mm. And but I'm also, the thing that motivates me even more than my friends is the fact that I've always been into self-development. So I'm constantly learning about myself. Mm-hmm. And I think about things all the time. I'm always reflecting, always writing notes. Mm-hmm. I'll go away after the day and I'll think, what did I learn today? Or what's come up for me today in the stillness? So sometimes the post that you see, it's that's been an aha moment for me. Okay. And I've thought, you know what? I think somebody else needs to hear this. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, it's what I've learned about myself or the journey that I'm on. And then I give it to the world. I give it to my friends.
Yes, yes. It's important to do that because everybody's on their different points in their journey. Some people don't study self-development at all. No. You know, the time that we're in, it's very new. People are unsure of how to deal with stuff. So I think it is very important when you know these things to share them, because you never know who you're helping.
Yeah.
As I said, you certainly help me from time to time. So I guess, you know, you say you're doing a lot of this work now, particularly in, you know, this pandemic. Mm-hmm. So you're working for the NHS. We understand that the NHS is under a lot of pressure at the moment.
Yeah.
What would you say are the major differences between how you worked with people pre-pandemic to how you're working with people now? What's the difference in the actual people that you're working with? Is it more difficult?
Not really. No, it's not actually. It's like, because although we have, like, you know, the pandemic going on and all this other stuff, what I've noticed is the issues are similar in a sense of it's still anxiety. Mm. It's still not believing in themselves. Mm. It's still not connecting to themselves. It's still feeling guilty a lot of the times for even having some of these feelings. Mm. You know, a lot of the people that I work with in the NHS, you know, they start by telling me how they're not coping, but then they say, oh, but I suppose I should be grateful.
Right.
Or, oh, my life's
validating their own experience and feelings. Yeah.
So a lot of my work with them has been normalizing things and making it and helping them to understand it is okay for you to feel this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And own it, you know, because I think these days what's tending to happen is we are told you can feel this way for 2 weeks.
Yes.
And then snap out of it.
Yeah.
So we've got into this system where we're not allowed anymore to actually just let ourselves naturally go through a process of feeling sad, grieving, feeling angry, feeling like, you know, we just can't do anything right now. And you have to go through that. And if you push yourself through that too much, you cause more damage in the future for yourself, because then you don't feel.
Yes. Yes, I hear you. I mean, I would go even further than that. I think society is kind of like pushed away the idea of, you know, until recently, idea of self-care being really, really important. Yeah. And it's almost like an airy-fairy thing that those people or those strange people over there do. And if you engage in that sort of practice, you're either weak, you're overly sensitive, and there's no place for that, particularly in the workplace. So, you know, I can see that it's changing now because, you know, people are really feeling it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. There's so many questions I could ask you, but I want to get on to you. So, what you know, when we met, as I said, you were doing a small scale theatre. How did you get from doing that to becoming a therapist?
Oh my goodness, it's a long journey. I'll give you a short version. Yeah. Well, obviously, I've always been interested in drama and performing art and things like that. Mm. And I did singing for a long time. Yes. You know, I used to be in a group, used to be in Black Voices for a while and different things like that. Yeah. So when I was in Black Voices, it was wonderful. I had an incredible experience, but I kept on feeling there was something more to me. Mm. It's like I was on stage sometimes, but I kept on thinking, this is great. And it's lovely that people want to know me and that they're listening to my voice. Mm. But I just had this sense that there was a real depth to me and I was meant to do more. And I couldn't shift from that. So one day I decided, I don't think this is what I want to do anymore. Right. And that was a massive thing for me to give up that job because it was a great job. You travel the world, you got paid very well. But I just thought, this isn't me. It doesn't feel like, it feels like a bit of me, but it doesn't feel like all of me.
Right.
So at the time, I left my job, didn't have a job. So I didn't know what I was going to do. And I also didn't have a lot of confidence in myself at the time either. So even though I was on stage, there was inside I didn't feel very confident. Wow. I didn't really think I could achieve much. Mm. So anyway, so what happened was I started...
Sorry, before you go on, like what was behind that? Because if you were the Black Voices, for those who don't know, are really popular a cappella group, would you describe them?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
In Birmingham, huge, as you mentioned, international, travel the world, you know, you get massive accolades, huge audiences. Like, what is not to love about you doing that? So it seems, kind of counterintuitive to not feel that way, to not feel full of confidence.
Yeah. I think a lot of that came from my background, my past, really. Mm. So I grew up, basically, as a child, I was always in the bottom class for everything.
Right.
I was told that I was thick by teachers.
Actually use that word.
Oh, yeah. My math teacher, he used to fling chairs at us. I was in the bottom class in secondary school. So my math teacher would throw chairs at us. He would tell us that we were thick as, you know, in my class. My biology teacher told me not to even turn up to the exam.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You're a 70s child. You're a 70s child. So it wasn't even that long ago.
Yes, that's right.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So basically I grew up to believe that I couldn't do anything. Mm. And then basically I was teased a lot at school because I wasn't good enough at things. So when I was at secondary school, I was in the bottom class for a while. Mm. And then I moved up to the middle class. Mm. And then from there, basically what happened was I got into the middle class, did really, really well. Mm. But then what happened was I got to the middle class and then I couldn't do the work.
Right.
So then I felt even worse than before. The victory I had to move up was wonderful. Mm. But when I got there, I then started to feel I can't do anything.
Right.
So then that stayed with me for 4 years. I walked around with shame because I couldn't pass exams. Mm. I got really bad grades. So for 4 years, I'd go to school feeling really, really scared of being shamed and also with the sense of I'm not good enough all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So it's understandable then. So when we're in Black Voices, you still have this feeling of not feeling so you're good enough. You didn't have a full sense of who you were, I guess, or what your potential was or what your value was. So you left seeking to find you. Is that what it was?
Yes. So when I left Black Voices, it was more about I didn't know where I was going. Mm. I didn't know what was going to happen in my future. Mm. I just knew it wasn't that anymore.
Okay.
Yeah, so what happened was I knew that I wanted to do more, but I also knew that my spelling wasn't great and I've always wanted to get help with that. Mm. So I went on this long search for a couple of years. I just tried to go to different centres, learning centres, just to find out whether I could really improve my grammar.
So hold on, before you continue. So what I'm not hearing here is any support did you have any sort of support?
No, I didn't have any support. I didn't really grow up in an environment where there was a lot of support offered. Mm. So at school or anywhere really. Mm. So I was kind of just left to wander. I wanted to learn though, but I didn't know how.
Right.
And there was this real desire that I wanted to just, you know, do better at school, all these things, but there was no one to help me.
Mm.
So I kind of was just left with the belief I'm just thick and I can't do anything. And even when I would try, you see, in exams, really thought that I tried, I would come out with something like 2 out of 30.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
I've been so disheartened.
Oh, it was terrible because in those days, I don't know if this happened to you, they would actually read out your grades in the class.
No, that never happened. That's terrible.
So every lesson, they'd read out my grades and I would be shaking. I'd be hot. My heart would be pounding. Mm. I'd feel all this shame because I knew mine was coming and mine was going to be at the bottom. Mm. And I'm not joking. It wouldn't, most of the time, it was 1 out of 30, maybe two marks right from my name.
Mm.
And so every lesson for 4 years,
right,
I would be shamed.
Okay. There was a reason behind this, right?
Well, my childhood wasn't brilliant, so I had a lot of stuff going on already.
Mm.
But on top of that, there was never anyone, even at school, that told me I could do anything. Right. So basically, I wanted to do things like, for instance, I don't know if you had this, but there used to be a book called Peter and Jane. Do you remember?
Yes, I remember them, yeah.
I longed to read Peter and Jane, but I was told I could only read Meghan Markle.
Wow.
Because you're not intelligent enough. I wanted to do French.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wanted to do French, but they told me I can't do French because I'm too thick.
Okay. So you were going to these centers in order to try and better yourself, your reading, your writing. What happened?
So I went to this. So after about almost like a couple of years had gone by, I still couldn't find anywhere. No one would take me seriously because at the time when I went to college, I managed to get my English, but I still knew I had a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So when I went to these centres, they would say, oh, we've got a course, but it's too basic for you. Or no, you've got your GCSE English. You're okay.
Mm-hmm.
So eventually I went to this place called Clock Tower in Harborne.
And that at the time, that was there.
Yes, you remember? Yeah. Great centre. So they did an English course there. So I went there and they said, oh, this is too basic for you, but I think you should go to this place in town called Doc.
Okay.
And they do a course, they assess you to see what your learning styles are and things like that. So as soon as I heard that, I got straight on the bus, went there, met this guy called Steve, and he said to me, we do testing to see if you've got dyslexia.
Right.
So I did this test and he came back and said,
before that, had you suspected you might have dyslexia or anything similar?
I didn't know a lot about dyslexia, to be honest. Mm. I'd heard it around, but didn't really understand it. So this was the first time really someone was explaining it to me.
Mm-hmm.
So after doing this test, and he told me, he said to me, we actually do a course here that can give you the tools that you need to basically cope with your dyslexia, but also this course helps you to cope with it emotionally.
Okay, wow.
So I went on this course. It was a 12-week course. Mm. And I'm telling you, it was like a life changer for me.
Mm.
This course, first of all, I was with people who understood for the very first time where I was coming from.
Wow.
Because they had similar stories of feeling shamed or feeling depressed. Because a lot of times I felt depressed because I felt like I would never have a career.
Mm.
I would never go anywhere in my life.
Mm.
All I could probably do is do basic jobs, but I would never have a career.
Mm.
So even though I'd gone to university and we'd done all these things, Rebecca, in my heart, I never thought I would ever achieve anything.
Wow.
So going to college and stuff, that was already brave for me.
Mm.
But after college, I didn't think I would do anything.
And it's amazing because, you know, when I knew you, I always saw you as someone who was always lovely, quite confident, so I never would imagine this was going on in the background, but we're quite good at on our social masks.
Very
so I imagine when you were there you had a massive sense of belonging.
I did. It was like I loved going to the classes and every time I went I'd learned something new, and I felt for the very first time I could just be honest. And people and the people that were on the course, a lot of them were my age, because at that time I was 30.
I just wanted to say to people who are listening, like, why I mentioned belonging is it's really quite important. When in teaching or in, you learn about, in many other disciplines, you learn about Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And this is a table which basically looks at what human needs are. And at the bottom, you know, you've got your very basic needs, and which is like, you know, your food, you need shelter and security and all those sorts of things. And on the third rung is love and belonging. And you have to be able to pass through all the first few levels in order to get to the top, which is self-actualization. So being able to fulfill your potential. So until you reach those bottom rungs, you're never going to get to the top. And so I think it's key, really significant. I can see why that was a turning point for you, because you got to the point of belonging.
Yes.
Okay, so yeah. Carry on, sorry.
Yeah. So basically, after that, after doing the course, I started to become a lot more confident in myself because I understood myself a lot more. Mm. And then what happened after that was halfway through the course, the tutor of the course said to me, Yvette, I heard that you write poetry and you sing. Mm. Is it possible you can come and maybe read your one of your poems and sing a song at one of the celebration sort of ceremonies that they had for the other students? So I was like, yeah, absolutely. I don't mind doing that. That sounds great. Mm-hmm. Went along and I decided to read this poem that I had written about being dyslexic. Mm-hmm. And it was all about the negative voice in my head that said, don't forget, you can't do this. You're thick. You can't do that. You can't achieve that. Don't forget that you could never get a job. And then halfway through, I realized what I'm saying to myself when I say, stop. Mm. I can do this. Mm. I can achieve. Mm. So then it becomes more positive. So I read this poem out and then people started to cry.
Oh my goodness.
And then after I'd done it and it was all over, people were coming up to me saying, that's exactly how I feel.
Yeah.
I felt like I couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So then the director of the whole centre came up to me and he said, thank you so much. And then the teacher came up to me.
Yeah, so the director of the course, he basically came up to me with also the manager of the centre. Mm-hmm. And the manager of the centre said, I think this girl needs to apply for the job that's going here, which was teaching the course that I was on. So my teacher said, well, yeah, I think she should. Because let me just go back a little bit. At the time when I was on the course, I was halfway through, the teacher of the course said to me, Yvette, what do you really want to do? Mm. And I said to him, and I wasn't feeling confident, but I said it anyway. I said, I've always wanted to teach. Yeah, so basically he had asked me, what do I want to do? And I said, I wanted to teach. Mm. So, but he said, Yvette, you need to go and do a teacher course, a basic teacher training course. Mm-hmm. So I remember looking at him with fear in my eyes and saying, I can't do that, Steve. Mm. I'm dyslexic. I can't do that. They laugh at me. Mm. And I meant it. Mm. And Steve looked at me straight in the eyes and he said, Yvette, all you need is an opportunity. Mm-hmm. And he said, you need to go. And I don't know why I decided, okay, I'll do it then. Yeah. So I went. The college,
perhaps maybe because you had that encouragement for once, you had that another voice saying, actually, no, Yvette.
Yes, I think you're right, because actually it was the first time I knew he knew me. Before then, nobody really knew me, nobody took me seriously, nobody understood my real fears, but he did, because he's dyslexic as well. And it was his course, he designed this course.
So
I knew if anybody told me anything, he'd be telling me to go and make myself look a fool.
Okay, so I need to know how you got from that point. So I know I'm rushing you, but
no, that's fine.
I need to know how you got from the point where you were thinking about going on this teaching course to becoming a therapist.
Oh my
goodness. How did that happen?
Well, I did end up enrolling on a teaching course, and it was a basic one. It was a 12-week course. Mm. And then while we were on the course, the teacher of the course said everyone should do a basic counselling course.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember thinking, I'd love to do that. Not because I wanted to be a counsellor, but because I had a lot of baggage that I knew I'd always wanted to deal with, but didn't know how. Mm. But to me, it was a back route in. So I decided to enrol on a counselling course, because by then I'd started to get a bit more confident with myself. Went on this course, not wanting to be a counsellor still, but I learned loads. And we had this amazing teacher
And I just was soaking it all in. But it was more because I wanted to, I was growing in myself, understanding theories more. And then you got to the end of the 12 weeks course, and the teacher that was teaching the counseling course said to me, Yvette, are you going to do level two? And I remember saying to him, not in a million years, I said. And I said to him, I don't want to be a counsellor. I have got enough problems of my own, thanks. Mm. So I went away and I decided not to do level two.
And what changed your mind? Well, you obviously did it.
Yes. Well, basically, I got the job teaching.
Fantastic. Brilliant. And that must have been a massive boost for you.
Oh, it was incredible. Because up until that point, I was just doing things like cleaning, working in a shoe shop. I'd never had a proper job.
I'm so surprised, Yvette.
Yeah. I got sacked from jobs. I'll tell you what. I racked up 30 jobs that I did before I got to this point.
And you were in your 30s at this point, you say?
Yeah, in my 30s.
Wow.
Yeah. So I did chambermaiding, I did McDonald's, I did working on the motorway, doing some mad things.
Right, your 20s.
All basic jobs, just because it was something to, you know, to get me by, but never believing I could have a career.
Right.
So basically what happened is I got the job teaching, was doing really well, found out I was a very, very good teacher, but I still had this belief I wasn't good enough. So although I was teaching, I was still trying to make the course better. Even though I had the manual, I didn't have to do any extra work. But for some reason, I was thinking I needed to go home, do more.
Was that a bit of, do you think you were experiencing imposter syndrome? Like, I'm not really meant to be here.
Yes, I was that, and also the fact that I grew up in a my background was very much like being told I was no good at anything, not even just from every direction that came from.
Right, okay.
So I never believed that although I was doing a good job, to me, I was just this thick girl, this girl that could do nothing and wasn't good enough.
So let me just say this, even when you say that word, thick.
Yeah,
it does something to me on a visceral level.
Like,
and I'm not the person to whom that was targeted, so I can't imagine as a child, as an adult, how that must have felt and how that must have really impacted you throughout life. That
Well, even when you knew me, I was depressed.
Wow,
you would never have known though.
I know, but I understand. I know how we hide these things. It's easy to do. How are you today? Oh, I'm fine. How are you?
Yes, exactly.
We all do it. So I get how it works.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, can continue.
So basically what happened was then, I was doing this job, trying to do better, more than I needed to the point where I got stressed.
Yes.
And I started, my head started to feel like it was going to explode. I remember I wasn't sleeping, even though I thought I was sleeping, I wasn't sleeping. I was just having all these thoughts going on in my head. So one day I was with my friends and I felt like the room was going round and round and round. I could hear people's voices, but it felt like I wasn't there anymore. And I remember phoning the doctors the next day and saying, can I come and see you? Went to see my doctor and I said, I think I'm stressed. And he said, I think you need to take some time off. And I was off work from that job for about 2.5 months and my head felt like it was just heavy.
Wow.
And I felt really low. And then eventually I came to the conclusion that I needed to leave the job.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was heartbreaking because I loved it and I was good at it. But the problem is I realized when I was teaching it, I was meeting all of these students who were suicidal, depressed, my age, somewhat older, and it was triggering things in me from my memories of my past, and I couldn't cope because I hadn't worked them through.
Right, okay.
So they were coming up and it was too much for me.
Okay.
And that was making me more stressed. Then it was making me think I needed to even do more.
Right.
So
again, I'm just aware of the time we have for this podcast, and I just I want to get to that point where the pinnacle. You became that therapist. What happened? So you had this moment, you left the job, you're extremely sad.
Yeah.
Would you say you were depressed at that point?
I was depressed,
Right, okay. So it was a really low point for you.
Very low point, yes.
So again, how did we get from here? The point where,
I know. Well, what happened after I got really low and left the job, I actually ended up calling the teacher for the counselling course. Right. Now, the counselling course had already started 3 weeks in. Right. I called up the college to see whether or not I could join, and the head of the department said, no, you can't, because it's already started.
Right.
But something in me said, no, forget what she said, go to the teacher. So I went, found the teacher, and I said, I really want to be on this course because I'm in a bad place. And my teacher believed in me. He always saw something in me that I didn't see. So he said, I think you need to come on the course and this is the right place for you. He said, don't bother with what the head said. I'm going to let you on the course.
Fabulous.
So I came on the course, again, not wanting to be a counsellor, but wanting to get help for myself. And then I went and started to have counselling for myself and then still do the course. Ended up loving the course, finishing that. So that was level two. And then part of the actual thing we had to do on the course is we had to go and find a placement just for a couple of weeks or so. And I chose Open Door at the time, which was a youth centre place, which actually counselled young people.
Right.
And they had a training that you had to go on, which was on a Saturday. So I went along to that, met a woman there while we were waiting, who started telling me that she was on this course, this diploma course called Gestalt Therapy.
Okay, yes.
Now, Gestalt Therapy is all about, you know, they look at, like, they use, like, chair work, dream work, art work, all the things. Now, I'm creative, aren't I? So when I heard this, I was like, this sounds fantastic.
Yes.
This sounds like me.
Yeah.
Not that I wanted to be a therapist, but I just loved the sound of what they were teaching. So I decided I was going to enroll on this course. And I got on.
Brilliant.
And then I started training to be a proper professional counsellor. When I was training, I didn't want to be a therapist.
Right.
And then towards the end of the course, I remember deciding I would never do a job I didn't like or didn't want to do ever again.
Good. Good.
So I was on the bus and something told me, pick up the Metro newspaper. Now, I don't normally read the Metro ever. So this was rare for me, but something in me said, pick it up. So I picked it up, flicking through, and then I saw a job saying, therapist wanted to work at New College in Redditch and Bromsgrove campus, running the actual counselling department for 6 months while someone's on maternity leave. And I something thought, I'm going to just apply. I'm never going to get it, but I'll apply. I applied and got the job.
Fabulous.
Now, this was massive for me, considering that I was scared of education. To actually be working in education was huge. Now, a lot of my friends told me not to go for the job because it wasn't even in Birmingham. But I was like, no, I don't care, but good experience. Got the job, did really well at it to the point where they didn't even want the other therapist to come back.
Wow.
Yeah. the actual department grew more than it's ever grown ever.
Right.
People were coming left, right and centre, to the point where when it was my 6 months was up, the head of the college called me in his office and said, we've heard how good you are. We don't want to let you go. And we know the other therapist is coming back. Now, listen to this. He said, how would you like to become a counselling teacher and teach the course here?
Wow. Wow. Look at that rise.
I know. And yes. I said to him, what? Because that was my dream now.
Yeah.
And then he said to me, I said, but do you know that I'm dyslexic? He said, and what's that got to do with me? He said, what do I care? He said, I just want to know you're good, and you are.
That's fabulous.
So I got the job and I did really well at it. And then what happened is the counsellor that was supposed to come back decided she didn't want to come back.
Right.
So I ended up running the counselling centre there.
Fabulous.
And being a teacher, teaching level 1, 2 and 3 counselling.
It is so inspiring, Yvette. Yeah. Like, so inspiring to like to hear where you came from. That young person with very little support who was told that she was it. Like having no sense of self-worth.
Yeah.
Having gone through your whole 30s, not having a clear sense of direction, having done all these different jobs trying to find yourself, having all these doubts, and then in your 30s, what I'm hearing you say is what kept you going, what kept pushing you forward was hearing these voices that were finally for yes, you, yes. seeing you, yeah. recognizing you, recognizing mm-hmm. your challenges and seeing your potential,
yes.
you started to listen to those voices. And through mm-hmm. doing that, you started to trust yourself and your instincts, even yes. when you were like, I can't do that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, other voices that were telling you, you can. But I imagine yes. also, there's also another voice in your head that was saying, well, what happens? What maybe if? What if? That's what I'm hearing. I'm also seeing, I mean, I've made a few notes here. I know you had the support of your amazing teacher.
Yeah.
As I said, you listen to your inner voice.
Mm-hmm.
I love when you said you made a clear decision. You made a decision that you didn't want to have, you didn't want to do any job
yes.
that you didn't enjoy anymore.
Yes,
and I think
yes.
you know, that was very, very clear.
Yes.
And I think that's really important when deciding. When trying to move forward and progress, it's like, it's, well, what are you going to eliminate?
Yes.
And for you, you were eliminating the idea of being in a position where you're just not happy.
Yeah.
And then again, what I kept hearing over and over again is you trying despite your doubts.
Oh, yeah. Really, I mean, and I think what I want people to realize is everything I did, I was terrified.
Mm.
You got to remember, I was always coming from that wounded place.
Mm.
So every single thing, from going to enroll on a course at college, from actually even deciding that I was going to go for a job, I never applied for jobs. So I was terrified a lot of the times, but I did it. Even though I was scared, my heart was pounding, I still decided I was going to go for it.
Brilliant. That's absolutely amazing.
And now, amazing. Like, even I'd worked from there, I ended up working at Stratford School, you know, education, which is a place that I never thought I would ever be able to work.
Yes.
Working for the NHS. I actually teach managers of the NHS. This is, if you told me all these things
yes.
years ago, I'd be like, don't be so stupid. Yes. How am I ever going to be able to do that?
Yeah. So if you were... No, I mean, I imagine you do get into these situations, but if you were faced with someone who had such low self-esteem and low self-worth and really just believed they were good for nothing for whatever reason,
yes.
or they're just not good enough,
mm-hmm.
what three things would you say is... three things, yeah. Forget three things. What would you say to this person to kind of get them on their journey, to kind of point them in the right direction?
Oh, a few things, really. I think one, I would say, if there is a voice in you that says you can do more, let's scrap the fact that you think you can't and you have the fear, because you've got the fear and the doubt. They are not really you.
Yeah, they are just... Get the book, your chimp paradox. Yes. I keep talking about that. It's a chimp.
Right. They're just parts of your wounded self, but they're not you. That voice that kept on telling me, I want to do more, that was real. That was me. And I had to follow that. But it meant I had to push through the fear, because it's the fear that's stopping us from really knowing who we truly are.
Yeah.
I'm amazed sometimes when I think about who I am now. But I was always that person.
Yes.
But it was my wounded self, those chimps that were telling me I wasn't. So I would say to them, trust that voice in you that says there's something more to me. Trust that. But I would say that you gotta take the risk. You have to face those demons, because you will never know who you can be until you face those demons. If I hadn't pushed through those fears, even though I was afraid, I would never know that this is what I could be. And I'm still on a journey.
Yes. Isn't that exciting? Because in the larger scheme of things, we're still young, right?
Yeah,
so there's so much more to be achieved.
Yeah.
You know, you're not even seasoned yet.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So I'm really excited for you. I'm excited for the fact that you're, on top of all of this, you're now putting a story into a book.
Oh, yeah.
When do you think you might be finished?
Well, at the moment, we're working on all the pictures and things like that. So, so it's almost done. I would probably say, I would like to say at least by June, July.
Yes,
and really the book, it's about this bird. Basically, I'll tell you a little bit about it. It's about this bird. And this bird sits on this branch every day, every night. It's never moved from this branch for years. And it watches all of its friends flying in the sky, going off, doing all these adventures. Coming back, and it often sits there really sad, thinking, I wish I could do that. And then one day a friend of the bird's comes and sits by the bird and says, why is it that you never seem to fly anywhere? And the bird says, well, I can't, because if I let go of the branch, I'll fall and I'll die. And then what happens is the bird, his friend says, but you've got wings.
Yeah.
And then the bird says, what do you mean I've got wings? I don't understand what you mean.
Oh my gosh.
Opens his arms, said, look, you've got wings like me. And he starts flapping wings.
Yes.
And then so the bird goes to, his friend goes off, the bird goes to sleep and it's tossing and turning in its bed, crying, thinking, why did that person tell me I mustn't let go? Mm-hmm. And we're thinking, well, who's this person?
Yeah.
So the next day, his friend comes back and said, I've just come back to check on you because I know that you were really upset by what I said.
Mm.
But the bird says, well, I couldn't even sleep. I couldn't even eat my breakfast, he says.
Mm-hmm.
So then his friend says, well, tell me a little bit more of who told you that you couldn't fly. Mm. So the little bird starts to think, and he's thinking and thinking. And eventually he remembers. It was, and he said to the bird, he says to his friend, it was this fluffy thing. And it just says, it had fear in his eyes as it fell from the tree, and it told me never to let go of the branch, whatever I do.
Mm.
Next to the bird is this fluff, piece of fluff and this fingernail, which was this thing.
Mm.
So anyway, so his friend starts thinking, well, who could this thing be? So eventually his friend says, hang on a minute. That fluffy thing that you're describing is a cat.
Oh.
It's a cat. On the tree, and he hasn't got wings. That's why I told you not to let go.
Yeah.
So he said, but you're a bird, you can fly.
Yeah.
So he said, listen, this is what you need to do. You need to practice. You need to spread those wings, say I can fly. And so he does all the affirmations.
Yes.
He's been doing all the affirmations. And then in time, he builds his confidence up and getting to know his wings. And eventually you see the bird flying off on his journey.
Oh my goodness. I love the creativity of it all, but the imagery, I can just hear so many people in that story.
Yeah.
So many people who are still holding on to that branch. Yes,
that's right. Somebody told them.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't realize that.
Yes.
When I first started learning about this whole idea of having beliefs, I didn't realize that beliefs weren't true. They weren't facts.
Yes, that's
they're
right.
They're just things that we tell ourselves, and we think that they're true.
Mm-hmm.
But just a perspective of the truth, and they can be changed.
Yes, that's right.
And isn't there, that's where the hope is. So, I mean, that is amazing. I'll be buying the book.
Thank you. Well, there's going to be one for like a total child version. There's an adult version, which is more of a therapy one. So at the back, there'd be questions like, well, who was it that told you that?
Yes.
What are you holding on to? Yes. Who's your friend that could tell you the truth?
Yes.
What is your support? What do you need to do? Because that bird had to take a risk. He may have became aware, but he still had to take a risk to let go.
Yes.
Some people are aware, they've done all the courses, they've done all the therapy, but they won't let go, because that's the real part, the action.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the scary bit that you face.
Yes.
You personally face time and time again. But do you think it gets easier with practice?
It does get easier, but I'll be honest with you, even now, still things come up for me, but I know what they are and I know where they're coming from. So I go, okay, I know that's my wounded self. And then I have to comfort that part of me and say, you know what? We're okay. We can do this. We have done it.
And is there something, I mean, I heard something about fear and excitement being two sides of the same coin.
Yeah.
So is there a way of perhaps changing how you see the fear, how you view the fear?
Yeah.
Feel more excitement about it.
I think some people would be excited, but I don't meet a lot of people that are, if I'm honest, excited about the fear.
Yes.
I think a lot of people are just still terrified.
Yes.
But I think what I'm trying to teach a lot of my clients now is when the fear comes up, acknowledge it, ask it, what is it you want to tell me? Because when fear comes up, it's telling you about an old story.
It's
coming from a wounded place, and that needs time. And I often say to my clients, if you were talking to a little girl or boy and they were scared, you wouldn't say, for God's sake, snap out of it. What would you do? You'd comfort them, wouldn't you? You'd say, it's going to be okay. It's all right. You're safe. That's what we need to do a lot of the times when our fear comes up. Don't punish yourself.
Yes.
Acknowledge why it's come up, where it's coming from, what's the story behind it. Comfort that part of you by letting that part of you know we're not there in that trauma anymore. We're somewhere safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And just hearing that is comforting, and knowing, you know, it's one of the biggest lessons I learned after my cancer experience and going through therapy is that, you know, self-care isn't It's not a treat, it's essential.
Yeah.
And there is something that's so comforting and lovely about speaking to yourself nicely.
Oh yes, definitely. You know,
being that really nice, caring, you choose to call it your parent or whatever, but that overseer of you that's protecting you.
Yes.
You know? Okay, we have to bring this to a close, unfortunately.
That's fine.
But I want to thank you so much for sharing you with us. Mm-hmm. And if there are people who want to get in touch with you to use your services, perhaps, or even want to keep a track of when this book's out, what's the best way they can get hold of you?
Do you know, at the moment, I'm working on putting together my own blog. I'm literally in the process of doing that. So at the moment, I don't have anything to offer. I know. Well, this is so new. In the lockdown, it's given me opportunity to really work on my business for the very first time. Mm-hmm. So I do workshops, but most of the companies have brought me into those. Mm-hmm. But I am going to start doing workshops on my own. So probably right now, the best way is maybe once I get it sorted, I will let you know what that website is going to be. But it's going to be great. I've got some wonderful courses, you know, that I'm working on. So that I just want to teach what I know now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I will happily promote that for you when you're ready.
Yeah.
But I want to, you know, I don't think you need luck, but I wish you the best of luck anyway.
Oh, thank you.
And, you know, I'll just continue to watch your journey. You know, now I'm lot more informed, and so I'll just know exactly what that means to you now, and you just, I can imagine you're inspiring so many people. So continue doing your thing. Thank you so much,
and thank you for having me. It's been lovely. Just been able to share.
Very, very welcome.